B-Pod Studios.
Get ready, get ready. It's time now for Zolak and Bertrand. Brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Noontime hour here on Zolak and Bertrand, presented by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. We come to you from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Waltham. I heard Jay Stu has some hockey rumors for us. Is that right, T-Bone? What has Jay Stu been saying?
Well, his phone has been talking. His brown check mark has been talking.
Brown check mark phone update, is that what it is?
Mostly about Tyler Bertuzzi, from what I understand.
Go ahead, Doc.
Sorry, you said T-Bone now, Hardy.
Yeah.
Do you have the audio of me?
Do you have the audio talking, Jason? Oh, we don't have the audio.
It was an entire segment.
It's a lot.
Oh. It's a lot.
Oh. So some of it has to do with Hampus Lindholm. Some of it has to do with Tyler Bertuzzi. Do you want the rundown? Do you want the transcript?
What would you say is the rundown of this?
How did it start?
He said he got a call. He would call this person and informed hockey guy, brown check mark.
Yes.
But not quite paying $8 a month for a blue check mark.
Correct.
He reports from his brown check mark, Tyler Bertuzzi is looking for $7 million per season. $7 million. When the Bruins traded for Bertuzzi, they thought he'd be somewhere in the range of $5 million. Okay? Elliot Friedman believes the Bruins want to keep Bertuzzi. I think others have sort of intimated that in their reporting. Is that fair to say? They would like to keep Bertuzzi, but they would need to do something to free up the money to be able to do it. Now, we know the Bruins are in cap hell right now. That's what I would like to call it. But that was one item. The other is this, and I think it sort of ties into it, and that is the Bruins are obsessed with Dmitry Orlov. And would like to keep Orlov more than they would like to keep Hampus Lindholm, who they traded for a year ago and extended.
Really extended.
And Jay Stu says the Bruins might have buyer's remorse when it comes to Lindholm and that he's available in a trade. What do you make of that?
I think everybody would believe that they have buyer's remorse based on how sort of a non-presence he was in the playoffs and towards the end of the year. You didn't mention his name a lot. But you knew of the extension, and you're excited about Bertuzzi, but you just felt, oh, God, just hope this guy's not going to be a rental, and he's going to bounce. Hope he likes it here. Seems like he likes it here. Told his agent he likes it here, but sort of underestimated where the money would go. He had a good year. He had a good year since the trade and increased his value. That's why you get the jump from around $5 million to $7 million. I mean, common sense right there is like, I'd love to keep this guy and somehow move. Potentially be interested in moving Lindholm.
Hey, that's makes sense.
Makes sense from his informed Bruins insider.
Yeah, I mean, should they have buyer's remorse? Right now, it certainly looks like they should.
Yeah. Yeah, what are some of the reasons you failed? Yes.
Also, Taylor Hall, apparently not happy with how the Bruins handled his injury, according to Jay Stu.
I thought this was interesting. So it was an ACL.
Oh. Wow.
I mean, I'm not reporting that. Maybe Jay Stu wants to put that out there. He phrased that as the unspoken gossip
that we all kind of danced around at the time was Taylor Hall had a torn ACL.
That was the gossip at the time.
That's what we were kind of hinting at, Mike, but didn't say on the record because we didn't want to compromise anyone.
You're doing Jay Stu as John Henry.
Right.
They're the same.
I remember John Cena tweaked his MCL.
He mentions Calgary as a potential place where Taylor Hall could get moved to. Again, high-level hockey guy, brown checkmark guy, Taylor Hall throwing that info out there, not thrilled with how they handled his injury. Jay Stu's belief is that he had a knee sprain and that... He's one trade rumor away from wanting out of Boston.
Do you hate anything on that list?
Nothing yet. I'm not upset with anything he has said so far. I want to keep Orloff over Lindholm. Good. They want to try and find a way to keep Bertuzzi. Good. They don't mind moving on from Taylor Hall. No issue there.
Okay, let's take them one at a time, though. Okay. Are you ready to move on from Hampus Lindholm because of his postseason?
Yes.
That's it. You're done with him.
I mean, it's a massive commitment they made to him. If there's a team that wants to take him off their hands, I would do it.
And you've seen enough from Dmitri Orlov to know that you absolutely want him and not Hampus Lindholm.
Yes.
Yeah, based off what they paid Lindholm. Yes.
Yes.
I mean, don't forget, Lindholm was in the Norris discussion for some of the year.
Not anymore. Now,
it was, and I know it. But then the other side of it, he didn't finish.
It's his new DeBrusque.
Take it as a big picture thing. What if moving Hampus Lindholm is what allows you to have the money to keep Bertuzzi as part of this?
But I don't want to pay.
Let me phrase it differently. Keep Lindholm in his contract, or move him and Hall and have the money for Bertuzzi and Orloff.
I don't want you to make another mistake. I don't want you to move on from a player who had a bad postseason, who was pretty, was really good for you during the regular season. Everybody's praising the front office for the acquisition of Hampus Lindholm right up until the playoffs.
I don't think they were wrong to want the player and to do what they did. I just think now they look at it and say,
okay, but to move on from that and free up money to what? Pay Tyler Bertuzzi $7 million a year?
You think he's going to get $7 million a year?
That's what he wants.
Let's say six and a half.
He's still going to be what? Your fifth highest paid player?
That's okay. You don't think he's okay as your fifth highest paid player?
He's going to be a top six forward.
No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go. Now's the time to be aggressive because this team's about to take a
leave. Yeah.
They go dive. Falling off that cliff. So I don't hate any of this.
Okay.
What don't you like about any of this?
I think it's a little reactionary on Hampus Lindholm. And there are other people I have talked to who said, what you saw there toward the end is more him than what you saw earlier in the year.
Oh, so you would agree that your people are telling you that the guy's a fraud.
That
playoff Lindholm is the real
not
Lindholm.
A fraud. Not a fraud. What you saw at the end is more like who he is. That's all. That's what I was told.
I trust your insider.
What about your goaltender situation? Did you mention that one there?
I did not mention any of that yet.
To me, that's kind of the interesting one. What do you want to do in net, Zoe?
I don't trade Allmark. Give it to Swayman. There's no chance you can run this team back next year.
That's what I would do.
You've got to do that. You've got to tweak this. You've got to find a way to create money.
Let's just go with Swayman.
Just go with Swayman.
Good. Go.
Give it to him.
Yeah, fine. Done. Let's do that. Looking to free up some cash. That's an easy one. And not to say that whoever ends up with Allmark is screwed. No, you get a really, really good goaltender. Congratulations. We got another one.
Do you know that Hampus Lindholm has 4 points in his last 25 playoff games?
What's the name of that trophy he was up for, Tom?
How do you like that stat?
The puke all over his Bowers trophy?
Yeah.
What the normal?
4 points in his last 25 playoff games going back to 2017.
Like, Tebow likes him.
Yuck.
How does that sit with you?
I hate how he finished the last two.
None
years.
In a Bruins uniform. None of those came in Boston.
Yuck.
Ew.
He's played 11 playoff games here. Not a single point has been produced. And he's got 4 total in his last 25 playoff games.
Gross.
That's the real Lindholm. We're getting the full Lindholm now in the playoffs. Bye. See ya. And you know what? As much as you say, well, that turned out to not be a great move, I do appreciate when teams correct their mistakes sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
That they don't hang on to the guy to justify their move, right? That they don't keep the guy around to justify, we were right. So, move on. It's okay. See what you can get. Work it out. Anything else we didn't address from a Bruins perspective? Oh, here's something I wanted to get to. Who should Bruins fans be rooting for in the Stanley Cup Final?
Oh, Butchie.
If you're a total fanboy of the Bruins.
Butchie.
No, it's the Florida Panthers. Now, I bet there are plenty of Bruins fans, though, that still have an edge and are still cynical bastards and want Bruce Cassidy.
Well, you're talking about two different types of Bruins fans. You're talking about fanboy.
Fanboy wants the
footy pajamas.
Fanboy footy pajama wants the Florida Panthers.
Because the team that beat you is the team that was going to win it all anyway.
Yeah, and the team that liked, and the group of fans that likes to rage against their franchise for not getting it right sometimes.
They're rooting for
Vegas.
Rooting
for Butch.
Yes.
I'm rooting for Butch.
I too.
Well, he's a personal friend of yours.
Ran into somebody with knowledge is a realtor.
Brown checkmark, hockey source. Yeah, realtor, sure.
Said Butchie really loved it here to the point, and it's not even from a hockey standpoint, was supposedly had put a deposit down on about an $8 million house down in the Cape. Right in the water. So
before,
I think felt
before
stable.
He got fired?
Yeah.
Well, he could still
came into agreement, got out of it, though.
Oh, he got out of it?
Got out of it, yep.
Could have still bought the house and spent his summers there.
I don't think he wanted to. He said, fire me, I'm out. Yep.
Hmm.
Maybe have you get a viewer realtor connections, look into that, potentially. But
well, if he didn't pass on it, I don't know what kind of paper trail there
was. Well, it was in agreement. Yeah. Knew the guy.
May have lost his deposit on that. There goes the $500 he put down on the $8 million home.
Gift cards.
Okay. Bruins thoughts now in the mix as well after presenting all those rumors from a brown checkmark source. Adam Schein makes a bold NFL prediction as it relates to the Patriots. We'll tell you what it is coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
They love what they do.
Coming in, yell and scream at each other about sports teams every day.
And they do it well.
Dorky, nerdy nonsense.
It's Zolak and Bertrand.
Hi, George.
On the Sports Hub.
Happened to hear a version of Refugee this morning. It was an alternate take.
Yeah, how was it?
I could see why it was the alternate, not the actual song. Don't you love that? They released like the unreleased version, you know.
Yeah, you made the right
call. Yeah, no, you guys made the right call. You made the right call.
Not always. Yeah. Sometimes they get it wrong, but it's rare.
Yeah. No, they got it right on that one. Waiting for Zoe to make it back to the
studio. We don't have to wait. Let's just go. I don't know where you
are. NFL.com writer Adam Schein believes that the Patriots will miss the playoffs this coming season.
Mm.
That's not exactly a massive, bold take. But that it will lead to the departure of head coach Bill Belichick.
That's bold.
This is the time of year where you get the bold predictions across the NFL media landscape, and that's what he thinks will happen in New England. He writes that, I think the Bills and Jets each win at least 11 games, while the Dolphins hit double digits. The Patriots feels like a 7-10 or 8-9 team, and that's actually a credit to Bill Belichick's brain. No disrespect to the best coach in football history, but this roster is a distant fourth in the AFC East. Mac Jones is average at best. His receiving core is subpar. Belichick's defense will typically be solid, but you need firepower in this stacked AFC. Back in March, New England owner Robert Kraft said it's very important for the Patriots' return to the playoffs. What happens if they finished in the AFC East cellar for the first time since Belichick's first season in New England, going all the way back to 2000? If that happens, it becomes his last season in New England.
Okay, so this kind of goes back to the expectations of the owner, because there's only one person who can actually do that, and
correct,
that's the owner. And the owner has said that the goal and the expectation is to win a playoff game. And if they don't do it and they finish with a losing record and they're dead last in the division and you don't really have any, you know, real signs of, I don't want to say improvement, but of things improving, right? If other teams have improved more and you're not able to get above 500 and you miss out on the playoffs, much less you don't win a playoff game, is it the most ridiculous notion ever to think they would move on from the head coach?
It shouldn't be.
It would have to be a disastrous season.
Okay, so let's scenario.
I don't think he can couch it with 8-9, 7-10, but credit to his brain for even getting them to that type of number of wins. If that's the case, he's not getting fired.
Name the scenario, not if you think it will happen. What scenario do you think it should happen?
4-13. 4-13 and your quarterback regressed even more.
My scenario would be they are healthy, no major injuries to speak of, and they go 6-11. Goodbye. It's a conversation at 7. It's a no-brainer at 6.
How's the quarterback play? Get better?
Doesn't matter. He was healthy. He played.
Okay.
They had multiple quarterbacks at their disposal. 6-11, you're fired. 6 wins, not enough. That's where they shouldn't even have to think too long and hard about it.
Yeah.
That's the scenario I'm asking for. We were healthy. We added coaching. We had every opportunity to be better, and we weren't. We were worse.
Everything that you said has to be in play. There's got to be health. There's got to be breathing, musculature. Right. All that stuff has to be going on, but I think it's also you have more of a conversation at 7-10 if the Bills steamroll you and Aaron Rodgers to the Jets works and Miami works and you get, if you're 7-10 and you're swept in your division, 7-10 would do it.
And 7-10 with players speaking out, players being unhappy, things like that happening. I mean, it could, you know, 7-10 leads to that type of crap happening. It happens in every team in sports.
Yeah.
When the season's not going well and there's losing and lots of it, that's when things can become unraveled.
And it's how you lose, too. And I think that does factor in. But
yeah.
You also read that statistic earlier in the show. Number 2 grossing team. Money-making team in professional sports.
Which means what?
Which means they're making money, and Bill's a big reason they're making money. As was the quarterback. Like once the brand gets up there to a certain point, like Dallas did. Dallas has been up there for a long time. The ability to stay there and maintain it. People still believe in your product, your brand, your sponsorships, everything that goes into it.
I believe in it more if they
and that's the last 3 years where you had bad.
Said,
but this is
and said we're not going to rest on our laurels and keep this guy around just because of his name. I'd have more faith in them because of that.
Well, I would hope you would hope so, but like that's and those numbers are making money numbers with
and
the last 3 years.
You know what? That's kind of bullcrap too. Because why does anyone have faith in Jerry Jones?
He's a good businessman.
So why fans have support of the team, though? They're not fans of the team because Jerry Jones is calling the shots.
A lot of them want him not to call the shots. Less impact on player shows.
If you don't have faith in Jerry Jones, then you can't be a fan of the Cowboys because he ain't going anywhere. He's not going to fire himself as GM.
Well, I know. That's my point, though, yeah, right? Like, you're a fan of the Cowboys because you're a lifelong fan of the Cowboys.
Right.
Keep Bill because you think it might be better for your bottom line? Winning would be better for the bottom line. A product on the field that you want to be associated with would be better if you're talking about what you're going to make in the coming years.
Oh, you got Mayo sitting there ready to go, too. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. A lot of pressure on a lot of people.
Healthy, 6 wins, that's it. Easy decision. 7, conversation. How did it look? How was the division? How are the players? What's the mood around the team? Were they in a lot of games against good teams that didn't go their way? Zoe scenario? If they're going to be in games in the fourth quarter, right?
Yeah.
Did they take it down to the wire with Are all you the best competitive? Teams they played?
Are you competitive or yeah. you getting your ass kicked?
How it looks at 7-10, you're getting your ass
kicked. You're getting your ass kicked, that's non-debatable.
Man.
It isn't. It's like now we're not even competitive. And we never thought that day would happen.
617-779-0985 is the phone number. Could it happen?
Anything in this league could happen.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
It certainly could.
Yeah.
It's definitely a possibility.
Blow-ups happen all the time.
Yep.
Asked me 6 years ago, you ever think Tom Brady wouldn't finish as a Patriot? I was like, what are you, insane? What are you, effing nuts? You went on to play 3 years elsewhere and win one.
Oh. By the way, speaking of Brady, his investment in the Raiders is believed to be more than ceremonial. Scott Zolak found that to be a very important report for Mike Florio over the weekend. He texted it to all of us. What stood out to you about that, Zo?
That it's not just, hey, we're using his face to sort of, you know, advertise here and get it going. That if something happens to Jimmy, I think there could be the ability that they would have the ability to sway the other owners to allow him to play.
Why does the size of his investment have anything to do with that?
Because the importance of having him for the future, that this thing's real. That, wow, we're going to have to deal with him for a long time. You know, post Mark Davis.
But the issue that the other owners
have... Be part of the boys club.
Well, what's the issue that owners would have with someone who is a part owner of the team playing for the team? What's the issue?
It would be more of an issue here.
Compensation.
Right. Yeah. It would be more of an issue.
No, here. You're playing with the salary cap. He's right. An owner. He's getting
you're
his money.
Things. You're fudging numbers.
Right. Yeah, so that's why you can't do it. So if he has a larger stake in it, I think that would make it even less likely that they look the other way and agree to let him play.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
He's not playing, by the way. We should take him at his word.
Yeah.
I don't believe the guy is playing.
I do think he's done. But like, if you got a disaster on your hands with Garoppolo, are you rolling with Brian Hoyer?
He did not do this last year where he was adamant and said, I'm done. I am never playing again. He didn't do that last time around. He issued his statements on Instagram and 40 days later was back. He is not coming back. He has said it again and again and again that he will not do what he did a year ago. Right?
Yeah. And I wonder how much Robert
He's
helped
made
him
it
here too.
Abundantly clear. By the way, he looks very thin. There's also that. He's gaunt.
It's not like T-bone thin. T-bone looks
very,
like
very thin.
Not a healthy thin.
I just wanted to revisit it for this reason. Okay, do you know why the Crafts and the Patriots didn't entertain Brady as a part ceremonial owner?
He couldn't.
Because they would not do what Mark Davis did, which is apparently sell him a significant piece of the thing.
Why?
What a dope.
Does Mark Davis need the money?
Yes.
Yep. That's what this comes down to.
They're renting their facility
he
out.
Freaking
stuff.
Needs the money again.
Oh yeah.
That team is a joke. That franchise is a joke. And I'm willing to bet Brady got a steal on what he's buying from the team.
I wonder how much Robert helped him in that, like to guide him there. Like, hey, yeah, do this.
I'm not stupid. I'm not selling you a piece of this here for what you're getting out there in Vegas. You have it. Go buy the piece.
Yeah. It's going to be very profitable for
every
you.
Single piece you can get of an NFL team will appreciate. It will. And so that's why he's in Vegas, because he picked the dumbest owner in the league to get the best deal.
Who needs the money?
Yeah.
There may be some other dumb owners that are like, yeah, but they don't need the money. If Mark Davis actually needs the money, good grief.
I mean, there have been rumors of the Raiders, you know, nearing bankruptcy.
Yeah, he was renting out his
multiple times.
The player facility.
They managed to get the county to pay for their players' facility, their practice facility out there in Vegas. And there was a loophole in that public money built the facility. And what did the Raiders turn around and do? They turned around and leased out the facility and left.
Make money.
Because they needed the cash. They had a public
the Taj
money.
Mahal.
No, that's where they are now. Yeah. That's not the thing they leased.
No. This is the, yeah. But originally when this thing.
Was it the land or a facility? I thought it It doesn't matter.
It was a facility.
It doesn't matter. They were,
it was the original training facility.
They were gifted something that they turned around and then rented.
That's what helped bait you to go to Vegas. Right.
Come here. The Raiders sold. They actually sold it, I'm reading. They sold their unfinished Henderson, Nevada headquarters and practice facility for $191 million. This is the deal that they did. So they sold off where they were building the facility, where it is now. I had the story wrong. And then they leased it back from the people they sold it to for $191
million. Oh, you can't do that.
They did.
Oh, they did.
And they're looking at them like, wait, we just paid for this and built this for you and you just sold it for $191 million?
Yeah.
And then leased, signed a lease to stay in the spot?
Yeah.
Then built that stadium and you have the highest price tickets in the league.
They scammed them into making $191
million. Nah.
Vegas.
Yeah, you gave it to us. We can do whatever we want with it. So we sold it.
Put it on red.
So they don't own that facility. They're leasing it. They used to own it. They sold it, though, before it was even finished. A facility and a piece of land that was gifted to them.
So what it all means is that Mark Davis could very well need the money, and that's why he's selling off a chunk of his NFL team to Tom Brady.
But he also likes Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
And so he wants to be around Tom Brady. That's why he's selling him a piece of the WNBA team, and now he's selling him a piece of the Raiders.
And I'm sure Brady likes being around him.
He's always had that, fascination with Brady, right?
Yeah.
The fights out there, the UFC fights, he's always in and around Brady.
Rolled out the red carpet for him.
Yeah.
Him and Dana
loves
White.
Loves Brady.
Yep.
That's why he's got the gig there.
He loves being friends with Dana White and Brady.
Headlines now, 617-779-0985. That was a bold prediction. Red Sox weekend. You got thoughts on that? So you've been watching a lot of baseball?
Actually, a lot of stuff going on this weekend. Not a lot of baseball.
You didn't catch it. Milliken, got some thoughts on your sinking baseball team?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, all right. That's on the way.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This hitting. Bounding ball through the open space and off into right field. They're going to wave him. The throw comes into second. Now on the way to the plate, and they steal a run. And this throw is into the outfield. Diaz taking off for third. They're going to wave him in, and he's going to score. And that looked like Little League. And the Red Sox are hearing it from the crowd here. As Tampa Bay steals a couple of runs running wild as the Red Sox throw it around, and it is 6-2.
Ah, yes, the old single that turns into a home run. It's a little
rare
team out there.
I did watch a little bit the other day when the guy dropped the ball. The ball was in play. Who busted their ass made it the second? Was it Devers?
Yeah, but it was Wong coming all the way around to tie it. That was like the big deal.
That one and the Tristan Casas shot to the gap. The guy misjudged the ball and ran into the wall.
Triple.
Yeah. So I did see parts of that one. But, good thing I didn't watch that one, huh?
Yeah. So the game yesterday, Milliken, correct me if I'm wrong, the score was 4-2 when that happened?
Yes. Corey Kluber just came into the game.
Okay. And I believe
4-2 top of the sixth.
4-2 top of the sixth.
Nice day for a game.
I believe if you know, just for gaming purposes, I believe a run scored by the Rays yesterday, the number was 4.5. So yeah, chances were they were going to score more after that anyway. But to have it happen in that fashion, unfortunate.
I think they're at a point right now where this weekend is overall. Cora seems to have had the last straw with the defense. I don't know if you guys saw today. They DFA'd Ramel Tapia, sent him packing. Arroyo's coming back. They took Kike out of short. I don't know why they haven't put Pablo Reyes there days before this when he's making the two errors he did in the first game on Saturday. But it seems like Cora finally knows like something has to change. You were just talking about it earlier, Beetle. Teams that are not willing to acknowledge when something hasn't worked or continuing to cling. The Red Sox, last couple years overall, have clinged to a lot of things where it's just time to move on. I think we know Duvall is coming back Friday. They're going to kind of fix this entire defense a little bit because you know why? It's one of the worst in baseball, but their whole pitching staff is built on run prevention. These are guys that aren't supposed to strike people out. It's a lot of weak contact. When you have Kike Hernandez making Garrett Whitlock work, and then you have to overexert the bullpen even more. Tanner Houck, multiple times yesterday as well, getting hurt by the defense. Yoshida, Justin Turner at third base. That whole thing later on in the game hurts you. It's just... the depth is finally hitting its wall on this team. They need some help. They need some injections, and they should be coming over the next week.
Did you hear Cora the other day before this happened? We're not a good defensive team right now.
Yeah, he said that last week. He was spot on.
The numbers don't lie, and he mentioned that we don't have a pitching staff that has swing and miss stuff. I think that was how he phrased it, right?
That's how the whole team, like all spring training, they were talking about the defense was going to be better. They should be in a good spot, and injuries have made it a little harder. There's no doubt about that. And Trevor Story is really kind of the key to truly fixing it. But there was a reason that they gave up on Kike Hernandez in April playing shortstop. For Yu Chang, a guy who was not even hitting 200. He'll pop a home run, but he plays good defense because they knew how important it was for him to be at shortstop. That's when they were going on those winning streaks. It was because he could pick up the pitchers. There, I believe they've turned the second least double plays in all of baseball this year. That's bad defense for you. Emmanuel Valdez is pretending to play second base. Can't do it. Kike Hernandez can't play shortstop. And then you have breakdowns like you did yesterday. Duran's been good in center field this year. Absolutely falls asleep at the end. He's sitting in right field with Verdugo as the ball rolls out. Can't have it. It's just a terrible look. Especially for a coaching staff. Let's be real here. It's all infielders. You have all former infielders in there watching that. Cora couldn't stand it. And a large part of it is roster construction. It's also a little concerning that this has been a trend for 3 years now where at times the team just looks like they fall asleep out there. They don't know what they're doing. Some of that falls on Cora, and I think he admitted it. But it's overall, it's roster construction and injuries right now.
Mm. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Roster construction is a big part of it. And defensively, the metrics for the Red Sox over the last three seasons have been dog crap. That's what they've been. And so they haven't exactly done the things they need to do to make the roster better to get themselves out of this hole. Cora to me sounds like a guy who might be ready to quit the job. That's what I think.
It only takes so much.
He was so blunt and so matter-of-fact last week when he said it.
I
think he's at some point throwing his hands up like, what, I'm supposed to teach these guys how to play baseball? It's a major league team. What is this? And Alex Cora is a guy who was always fighting for his roster spot in his career and was always a good defensive player, was always a smart player. Like, those are the things that he had to value and be really good at as a player. Mm. He must look at some of these guys on this team and say, you guys are an effing joke. I mean, what you saw on that play wasn't professional.
Right.
That was not major league level baseball being played on that play. And as a manager, you must be just at the point where you're like, ah, forget it. I can't fix that.
It's the last time you saw him smile. Like, he looks just bummed out. It doesn't feel like you're just going to continue to stay in it. You say help's coming and it's on the way.
But still, it's awesome that help's coming, but you look around.
Like, what's the quality of
it's reality?
Like, if on June 5th, you're like, we need injections of defense. Like, what? Your team blows if that's what you're doing.
Well, the reality
from a roster
is,
standpoint.
You know, they're down their 5-6 infielders into their depth chart now, bringing in guys like Pablo Reyes and stuff like that. But it's what we've been saying the last couple weeks, and I've tried to make clear. Yeah, they may finish a little better than 500, right around 500. It's not good enough. You're not going to be in the playoffs. You're going to be a couple games out either way. So it's awesome to dream about Adam Duvall. How much is Adam Duvall really going to change you? How much is he going to really uplift you? The reality is your ace, he's down. And he's going to be down probably for a decent amount of time here. You lost one of your best relievers in John Schreiber. And even if those guys were here, you'd barely be hanging on. And a lot of some of the younger guys in the rotation, you need Whitlock to take a step forward. It helps when you have good defense behind him. Same for a Tanner Houck. But they're going to push Cutter Crawford into the rotation, it seems. It's going to be about a youth movement for that rotation moving forward. They are what they are.
It's a bummer. It's kind of a bummer. because in the landscape of Boston sports, the Red Sox are even less relevant than they were a year ago. They just are.
Oof.
It's the truth.
And for Cora's part in this, I agree. Like, he didn't sign on for this.
Nope.
You know, you're supposed to be worried about, like, batting order and managing the pitching staff.
Yeah.
I got to go out there and
That's
teach.
That's what good teams do.
I got to teach fundamental baseball now. What?
Worry about righty, lefty, lefty.
I mean,
righty.
How many?
So I don't. You don't get embarrassed and booed in our home park.
Just think of all the guys involved in that play that he would have to tell. You're an idiot. Once they get back to the dugout. Really?
But the scary
I think every player involved in the play who touched the baseball, you have an issue with every single one of them.
But the scary thing about that, Verdugo, he's been a very good outfielder for this year. He's been one of the best outfielders in baseball defensively.
Slow to get to that one.
Connor Wong has been one of the best defensive catchers in all of baseball this year. Valdez, horrendous defensively. He's pretending to play the position. Some of it's just like, where is your brain? Like, where are you paying attention? It's just fundamental knowing what to do with the baseball.
Oh, my God.
Like, Duran not backing up the play whatsoever.
The whole thing is absurd. Absolutely absurd. All right, let's get any thoughts you might have on the Red Sox. The last place Red Sox, one game above 500 right now, and they're doing a lot more losing lately than they are winning. That's in the mix as well. We've got everything from today, Patriots items, even some Bruins items, Celtics hiring Sam Cassell as an assistant. We'll get back into that in a little bit. It's all coming up here on Zolak and Bertrand, presented by BetMGM.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
When it comes to talking sports, no one gets the listener.
What language was that?
Like Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm not sure.
On the Sports Hub.
Do you feel, in hindsight, you left the staff shorthanded at all on that front?
Well, I think one of the things is you know, obviously, we had a change in coaches 5 days before the season started, and we did try to add to the staff at that time. But you're also weighing, like, you've got a lot of people that are really talented in here. I mean, I'm sure you'll see and as be talked about, like, our assistants this year and our assistants pretty much every year are going to be called and asked by a lot of teams. So we have a good staff. And I think that that's one thing that, you know, kind of gets lost in the shuffle, right? Because we did have a lot of people that we lost too, but the staff we had was good. And we did try losing Damon in March. We again tried. But those timings are tough for people to up and move or up and, you know, join a new team that they don't know anything about or don't know. But that was, you know, just to be supplemental because we believed in the people that were here. Moving forward, we'll have at least, you know, we'll see how everything shakes itself out with what the staff looks like. But we'll at least have one addition that we'll make now that we have a summer to make it, and we'll go from there.
Brad Stevens last week talking about his staff and the assistants working under Joe Mazzulla. Sam Cassell is the latest hire by the Celtics. Their first real offseason move is adding Sam Cassell to the staff. And I've got to give him credit. It's a hell of a move.
Yeah, it's a good move, and it's a quick one, too. So, like, coming off the comments there and about him explaining how we lose guys every year, but we do have a good staff. We like them. We lost Damon in March, but we tried. But the good thing is we have a summer to figure this out. It felt like it was going to be a delayed thing before they would bring anybody in. Boom. Right away, you know, what, 3 days after Cassell's hired?
Is there a reason why Cassell hasn't been a head coach yet or didn't take a
head coaching
job? Can't
figure it out. He's interviewed for head coaching gigs. He hasn't gotten one yet.
And I don't know that we need to talk about red flags when it comes to assistant coaches, but it just
it's like the Eric Bieniemy thing, you know. Like,
well, it does seem odd that he, you know, hasn't had the gig yet.
I know what you're saying.
But I know it seems to be an absolute slam dunk of a move for...
1-3 rings, former player, which that league likes, having former players as head coaches.
I think the two teams, I was looking this up, where he had interviewed. He interviewed with the Jazz, and he interviewed with the... Houston, when they were looking for their guy. That's who he's interviewed with.
So they chose Ime over him.
Yes. They did. So, those are the two jobs that I know he's interviewed for. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to crack the head coaching roster, if you will. Right? Because so many guys get hired as retreads all the time. Like, once you begin, and then I think this is true of all of sports. Once you become that head coach, once you get a shot, you'll probably get a second one.
Yes.
Right? Once you get a shot, you probably are getting two. Most people get them. And so there's just not that many jobs. So I don't know if it's a red flag, but I think he's deserving of that opportunity at some point. And I think it's always possible that it happens here. If the complaints about Joe Mazzulla have already existed, what happens next season when Sam Cassell is on the staff? What happens?
Phones will be lighting up.
Phones are going to be lighting up. We're going to be taking calls of people saying, make Sam Cassell the head coach.
What are you waiting for?
What are we doing? By the way, Ben Sullivan and Garrett Jackson are among two of the three assistants that are reportedly leaving the Celtics. It's now three or four different reporters have it. Three coaches off the staff are leaving to go join Ime.
Ooh.
So it's not just about adding to the staff. This is going to be the first of several hires on the Celtics coaching staff this offseason.
Good start.
He was the top assistant, Cassell, that is, under Doc Rivers. And I don't know. I just like that it's a former player. Zoe, you can speak to this. What does it mean to have a former player as a coach, as a player?
It's trust. Your words mean more. Your words mean more. And again, I think it's different in that league because you're dealing with these five egos of players that are already phenomenal players that think they know it all. But it's little things, and it's like it's having those key pieces. You look like the team in Miami, a guy like Tyler Hero. You remember Eddie House? When he was here, even Rasheed Wallace had his roles. I mean, these are veteran guys that you kept around to help not be enforcers, but, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. Pay attention. Why do you think Al Horford's around? It's experience. You got a guy that's in his young 30s trying to coach a team, and when they're calling him up and there it is pregame, everybody put their hand in. Hey, guys, go make sure you have fun, smile, go have some fun. Didn't seem like they really broke that other one. We're fired up to go out there for game 7. A lot of places rocking out there for you. Listen to the way Pierce talks about it. Listen to the way Garnett talks about, the passion that you need to play. I think ex-players and guys that know it, that get it, that are proven and won. This is why, whether or not you think Doc's a good coach, he likes the gig and he will get gigs. And people like Doc. Because what did everybody tell you? Doc knows how to work the room. Cedric would say, too, hey, Doc knows, hey, buddy, how you doing? The media likes him. Teams like him. Players like him. That was an experienced team he had.
Jared Weiss writes at The Athletic that Sam Cassell was the main person responsible in Philadelphia for keeping James Harden locked in and was crucial in Tyrese Maxey's development. Cassell's sense of humor and the general way he carries himself help set the culture in Philadelphia, and Boston is counting on him to bring that to their locker room.
So think about that. Two maybe the biggest reasons you almost lost to the Sixers, and maybe you should have lost the Sixers. I don't know. But to keep Harden's ass in line, and that guy, Maxey.
Keep him engaged, right?
I can't tell you. I mean, every day after game came in, man, that Maxey kid, that kid's impressive.
That guy busts his ass. You don't see any loafers. No loafers on that team. No loafers on that Miami team. And at some point, Pat Riley had to turn it over to Spoelstra and trust him. This is even after post LeBron and that. And then, you know, but he was able to get Shaq in there at the beginning. And you establish that culture. Do the Celtics have a culture? I hope you do. I like to think you do. But how much you believe in things when Marcus Smart snaps in the locker room or guys rolling their eyes? Got the owner in there after three games telling you, get some balls, play harder.
Right.
Been around here a long time, 20 years. Owner, I don't like what I'm seeing. This isn't us. This isn't the Celtics. Sam Cassell seems like he's a guy that played here, that knows it, that played with Pierce.
Yeah, and he's got the resume of, yeah, I played 15 years in this league. You don't hang around for 15 years because you're a bum.
I wanted shooting threes. We wanted with inside game. We wanted with defense. You know, he's got different ways that he won.
15 years in the league, 3 rings as a player.
Anything else?
And a decade and a half as a coach in this league.
That guy has
seen a lot of NBA basketball.
That's the more important part. Like, he's seen it all, too, from the other side, meaning the coaching side. Because players aren't going to respect him as a former player, but you respect him as a coach because he's the former player that won. And he put his dues in as a coach. It's not just a first-year guy you're throwing out there. Hey, Tyronn Lue is coaching this league. You know, that guy, if that guy could coach, how the hell can this guy not be?
Yeah, he's looking at Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and saying, I was playing in this league before you were born, and I haven't left yet. Yeah. Okay?
I've seen a lot.
So they've been keeping me around in the NBA for a long time for a reason.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.